We got Dave Poulin coming up in about an hour or so from now. Talk more about the Sens-Kings game in just a second. You had ever an issue with you and Mira Simmer? Now, she normally drives, right? Didn't you tell me that?
Well, no,
or
not
you guys are 50-50?
No, I drove most of the time. Oh, when she drives, though, and if the boys are in there, then I like to sit in the back seat. Because I'd become accustomed to that over the years of riding in taxis all the time. I always feel like the car is going to go off the road when I'm in the passenger seat. I feel like I'm in a sidecar. Now, issues we have is that she takes quite a bit of time to get in the vehicle. Maddie and I are always first in the vehicle, and then Amira and Zach kind of come fumbling out of the house, and they get in. And then the other issue is when I decide to walk somewhere, whether it be airports or anywhere else, and I try to consciously stay next to her, I have a really tough time. She is the slowest walker on the planet. Yeah. So it's just in her own little world. And I don't want to be that guy that's like 10 feet ahead of your girlfriend, but it becomes very, very hard, JR. So those are my dilemmas.
Okay, there you go. I have no issue with walking ahead of my wife. I'm like, you got to keep up with me.
Yeah.
but that thing about not getting out of the car.
Yeah.
Oh my, that is, yeah. I never knew that was the thing. Yeah. I thought that was just me. Like
my wife
will sit. We'll get somewhere. I'll get out of the car. And because I got the key fob to lock the door, I'm like, or even if you can just open the door and then sit there for a while if you need to, doing whatever it is that you need to do. But just open the door so I can hit the lock and then I can go on my way and eventually you'll follow to wherever we're going.
Well, and also those, I guess it could be phone related, but I think kind of growing up, those are also large purse related. Would you not agree, JR? The people that generally carry that large handbag that they have a million things in there, including used Kleenex, probably packs of gum, and they search everywhere for something.
Yes. Could you not have looked, though, while you were the passenger and the vehicle was in motion?
No, you totally could have.
Yes.
You know, and like I said, and it is interesting, the conscience that I guess I'm also, hey, if somebody, I have any feeling they're waiting for me, I am in a rush to get to that person. Like, I'm consciously realizing that person doesn't want to sit there or stand there and wait for me.
You know, JR, could it just be that she's waiting for her husband to open the door?
Oh,
for her?
That's right. Hey.
Could that be it? Could she just be sitting there waiting for?
Is that a thing? Am I a concierge?
I think some gentlemen do it.
Well, yeah.
Do they?
That's it. Well, that when you're dating, when you're first dating, you do. Absolutely.
Maybe.
And
open the door for your wife to get out of the car when you go to the mall?
Not a chance.
Yeah, he has to have rose petals for going to the door, like coming to America.
Hey? If I started doing that now, she'd be like, what the heck is wrong?
Yeah.
You're having
an affair.
Yeah, exactly.
What have you done?
Yeah. That's when you show up with flowers as well. What do you do?
Yeah.
And then the other part of that is that, hey, when you want, when you open the door, JR, I think, you know, I'm just waiting from hearing those jewelry commercials, she wants to hear those same words that they utter in that romantic jewelry commercial.
Oh, yes.
But I could see Hammer on
Mr.
one
Jones.
Knee. Hammer on one knee just giving that.
Sarah.
That beautiful speech that we're hearing now.
That conversation is so uncomfortable. I don't like that. Oh.
All right. Let's get to the task at hand. Welcome back, everybody. 7:18 on this Wednesday morning. Sens fall 5-2 to the Kings. It was an ugly night, to be sure.
Into the zone, Kempe. To Kopitar. They move it around. Quick shot. Scores! Oh, what a snapper that was. As Fiala snaps it by Talbot, it's 5-1 Kings.
And this was a power play marker here. And, yeah, I don't think there's any question that this went right through Cam Talbot, and he's getting the hook. 5 goals and 14 shots. My heavens.
Yeah, not a great performance from Cam Talbot, but not a great performance by the Ottawa Senators. They didn't get him any support, starting with the 2 goals in the first 2:15 of the game. And eventually a 5-2 defeat. LA beats Ottawa, and the Sens' mini two-game win streak is over. Here's DJ Smith on the letdown after two emotional wins from the weekend.
The excuse would be two emotional victories, and now there's a letdown, but it can't happen. The situation that we're in, we're crawling ourselves off the mat, and you know, to not be knowing how much this win would mean going into the road to play Dallas and Nashville, two tough teams. We knew the stretch of 3 games is against 3 playoff teams. And, you know, we had an opportunity at home to jump on a team, and we didn't do it.
There is DJ Smith postgame.
Yeah, and again, Jay, you're going to have some flat starts. And you can't even, like I said, when I look at the modern-day athlete, it is very seldom that they're not prepared. They're not ready to rock and roll. But it happens. That's 82 games. I don't care if the dads are there or not, although I think that's great motivation. I don't believe any distractions. Now, I'm a big morning skate guy, but throw that out the window. But the part of it is if you don't have the proper structure, when you have these struggles, JR, this is what's going to happen. And I'll say as far as Cam Talbot, it's interesting because relate his numbers to Minnesota, and I do believe this coming over to Ottawa, and he's been good, great pro. He is a really good first save goaltender. He's also a goaltender that under the structure of Minnesota last year really thrived, and I don't take away from him. I, you know, it's not like a bad thing. They're not as good this year without him. But when you come to Ottawa and you don't have the structure and on broken plays and when he moves lateral,
right,
that's not the strength of his game. And that is where Forsberg, and we saw that last year and we saw it on Saturday, and I think overall, and he's been battling some things, JR, but that's the athleticism. When you have broken plays like last night and you're not able to do it, that is the difference in the two goaltenders for me.
Right. Yeah, there were some, and again, I'm not excusing the performance at all. It was not nearly good enough, but there were some, that first goal, that's a, right, crazy bounce, hits the guy, whoever was standing in front of the net, hits his leg and lands right in the right spot. But the guy who ends up putting in the net, Matt Roy, I believe it was, right? He's not there to put the puck into the empty net if Alex DeBrincat is taking care of business on the defensive side of things. So, you know, bad bounces happen, yes, but if your structure is right and your players are doing the right thing, then that probably isn't, it's not an empty net scoring opportunity.
No, and you go through the individuals, Jaron, I mentioned DeBrincat in the first hour, and I'm not going to walk it back, but again, on the power play, and he comes in, you can see offensively he can make plays. I'll get to his power play point in a second. But if you start to look at the Ottawa Senators on the wing, and for Matthew Joseph, it's a struggle playing his offside. The probably strongest defensive player that they have as far as wingers, JR, would be Tyler Mott. And then after that, from Kelly to Watson, switch over to Joseph. You know, Drew isn't too bad, but Brady Tkachuk to Batherson, switch over to DeBrincat. There's not a lot there. And this is go back to, and people hate hearing me talk about it, but it's Paul and Brown, the defensive contract to your team. And the other part, and it's not a mystery. Thomas Chabot is starting to score goals. One thing I talked about before was downhill pucks. And the other day he got that from Joseph for the one-timer, who is a right shot. And then he also is now getting pucks from a right shot on the half wall. And you think it's you think all of a sudden he's scoring just because that is such a big thing. These little things, and I know it adds up when a team's struggling, JR, but I talked about Stutz as a left shot. You cannot set up the one-timer. Why do you think he's suddenly scoring some goals? He's being set into beautiful spots, and also people recognize DeBrincat's a threat to shoot the puck, right?
Right. Yeah, he's taking a lot of attention.
Oh, he does for sure.
Even now, even through the first third of the season now,
And
he hasn't scored at the pace that he would like, nor the team would like, but he still, at this point, is still drawing it. You watch the power play as it moves around, and it's almost like he kind of is half drawing away two of the four players, and that is allowing extra space for the other players.
And it's amazing when you watch players like that, and that has been the most impressive part of his game. I didn't realize what a good playmaker he is, meaning DeBrincat. And I go back to Adam Oates watching him, JR, a guy that couldn't skate. But what he could do on a half wall on a power play and back people off. Jason Spezza had that ability down low, right? Like, it's such a gift. It looks so easy. But when you have quick hands, you are a threat to shoot the puck. The way that's opened up the rest of the ice, and again, I also go back to, and I know the carryover from last year, but now all of a sudden Shabbat's healthy. Now all of a sudden you have a first power play unit that's getting reps and timing, and what's happening? You are scoring at an elite level, and that's something that should have been together since day one, especially with DeBrincat on that half wall.
Two power play goals for the Sens last night. That was one positive, and Thomas Chabot got one of them. He's now got four power play goals this season.
Yeah.
He had three in his career coming into this year, and he's got four this season in the first third of a season. So, you know, as you said, he's maybe putting in better spots. He says and said, I think, after the last game, he's been told to shoot more. But I looked at the stats last night, and again, if you prorate it over an entire season, his shot volume this year is about the same that it's been every year in the NHL. He averages between about 160 and 180 shots a year, and right now he's at 44 through, and he's played 20 games. He missed some games, right? Yeah, so that's essentially a quarter of the season. So he's on pace for about 175 shots this year. So the shooting volume remains the same, but I guess just in terms of the power play, he's just putting himself in a little better spot.
Yeah, and it is interesting, JR, because I've seen defensemen, and one is an old-school Sylvain Côté. He scored 20-plus goals in a year, JR, where, hey, all of a sudden, he did a good job at putting pucks through like Erik Karlsson would do, and they just go in. And for Thomas Chabot, I think there is a bit of that, because we'd see him get some looks last year, and you're like, holy moly, he's wiring the thing. But that subtlety that you just mentioned right there, and this is part of Alexander Ovechkin, what makes him effective. The goaltender knows the one-timer's coming, but if has Backstrom on the ice or other players in the past, you still have to be conscious of the fact of, okay, well, if I cheat on Ovechkin, that's going to happen. And you can't, you know, underestimate, here I am now chatting up to Brinkett, but that part for a goaltender, knowing there's a 40-goal scorer on the half wall, the power play, is just that subtle bit. And then the other thing for Thomas Chabot, and I think it is a lot to do with Brinkett, and maybe consciously he's doing it, JR, his shots aren't getting blocked nearly as much, right? I mean, last year it was so deliberate that it was either going to be him or down to Norris that everyone just basically cheated and got in the shooting lane. Well, you can't do that with DeBrinket. And just watching it Saturday night, it's not just those two. Like, the unit itself as a five-man group is just an absolute treat to watch. And they're going to need that the rest of the way here till Zuber, well, maybe the rest of the season. Right. A super hot power play and some real good goaltending, and they got one of the two last night.
It felt to me like it was one of those opportunities, though, with Phoenix Copley in the net for the LA Kings. And you know,
that's maybe a great handle, though, you got to admit, right?
Yeah. Like, did you Copley. Know he's from North Pole, Alaska?
Well, no, I only heard... And why are they, like, I got to be honest with you, like, yeah. I did contact some of my friends in Finland.
Yes.
Because you can go to Finland and Helsinki this time of year, and you can mail back letters from Santa.
Yes.
Now, he lives in Lapland, and he actually has a reindeer farm, so I'm a little concerned that Alaska, I don't know if this is a Sarah Palin thing, but I don't know if they technically are really the North Pole, but anyway.
Well, the town has claimed it,
yeah.
Anyway.
But you're right, that is a pretty cool thing, and again...
This guy has played 32 NHL games over 9 pro seasons. Yeah, he's won one game in his career going into last night. And that came in 2019. Yeah. Like, this guy personifies a journeyman goalie. And for the most part, they didn't put him under any duress during that game last night. All like, right. It was other than the power play, which was good again last night. 5-on-5, mm-hmm. Ottawa didn't get really a whole lot done.
No, and people talk about, hey, if it's Ottawa, well, somebody's going to get their first goal of their career or something's going to happen. And I think every fan base has that, JR. But if there was one thing I can boil down over the 10 years of covering the team, I'd love to go back historically and look at backup goaltenders, third goaltenders, goaltenders that have already played in Ottawa. The combined records of some real, real average goaltending. You know, I mean, Halleck rolled in here just playing terrible hockey, and he ends up winning a game. You know what I mean?
Not feel like a game last night in which you see who's playing net for LA, and you're going, and the game plan has to be shot volume. We have to just inundate LA as much as we can in the first 5 to 7 minutes, yeah. And just try to get obviously a goal, yeah. But just get some momentum off a guy who I'm sure isn't going into the net with a high degree of confidence.
No, it really is. And as I said, JR, I have no doubt in my mind that when the dads are around or the mums, I don't see this as some big distraction. There wouldn't be a player out there that wouldn't be like, man, this is the time you want to perform. We want to win last night because we want to go to Dallas and Nashville, which I'm assuming Big Chuck had a part of this because last year they were in Nashville realizing this is the place you want to go. These are two of the best cities in the National Hockey League. And to that, JR, it's almost like you become a bit rattled, right? That's what it also, because the flat stuff and everything else, it's like, oh my God, all of a sudden we're down 2-3. And then you kind of look around, you can't overcome it. But I would look at absolutely. That was one where, when I looked at this week, I thought, well, you got to beat LA and Anaheim. You know what I mean? And maybe you can squeeze one out between Nashville and Dallas. Now you're saying to yourself, going in against Dallas, who got blanked last night, mm-hmm. and then going into a very good and very hot Nashville team at home. Yeah, he got a real tough, but as I said, I also expect with the dads on the trip, I expect Otto to play great on Thursday, to be honest with you.
Well, speaking of, a lot of the dads look like, based on the TV coverage last night, a lot of them were into town last night and went to the game last night. Here's Brady Tkachuk after the game on what his dad's reaction might have been had he played a game like that.
Probably not much talk in the car, but kind of move past it. We gotta definitely learn from tonight, not let it happen again. But turn the page from onto the father's trip here.
I said it kind of in last night, sort of half in jest. But I wonder what would have happened had after the first period, and they're down 4-1 at that point. But let's say it was 2-1. If you just put the dads you know what? They didn't even wouldn't even had to say anything. Just have the dads filter into the dressing room while the guys are having.
You can usually just give the nod or the look.
Orange slices, yeah. Well, that's it. You don't need to say anything. It's kind of like, boys, you're letting me down here. Let's pick it up.
You're probably a few cups in, so you've got to adjust your pants, and you kind of come in and you just look in the door, and then you do that. Yeah. Hey, you're talking about, I assume Mr. Norris, who didn't play a ton, but if you got the Sandman's dad and you got old Chucky there, You got a couple of great hockey players, so a little look from everybody. But like I said, I don't factor that in. The repetitive portion of this, unfortunately, and this goes back way before DJ Smith, so you want to kind of look at it personnel, you want to look at it for management, JR, but this is the same movie for the Ottawa Senators. I feel like we've been talking, you need a hard 60, we need to play 200-foot hockey, what you need is some real good structure here, and you don't need hard practices, you need smart practices, and unfortunately, it's just really hard, and I'm not sure up front when you match the blue line, JR, and I talked about the wingers, I'm not sure that you got the proper personnel either. I think it's going to be really hard to climb out of this.
Perhaps we should have seen this coming based on what happened during the American anthem last night. Now, Sophia Pierce has been inarguably, since Lyndon Sluage is no longer singing the anthems. She does some of them.
Everyone they've had has been great. Saturday was like off the chart.
Yeah, they've all been good. But I think she's been, and how old is she again? Like 14 or 15, something like that?
I think she's now, around 13, 14.
Yeah. Anyway, she's a great singer.
Amazing.
But last night, kind of halfway through the American anthem, she kind of lost the words, as it were. Now, outstanding, she recovered and finished it, and the crowd was, kind of, gave her a great applause and kind of kept her going. But maybe, and maybe this speaks to why Sophia might have stumbled a little bit, is because for the first time before the game, Gord Wilson actually met Sophia for the first time. So if you're looking for somebody to blame for how all of last night turned out, so the Sens stubbed their toe after Sophia kind of kicked it around a little bit in the anthem, and that she kicks around a little bit in the anthem because
Do you think that upset the LA Kings as well?
The anthem? No, I don't think
yeah,
so.
No,
it's a total joke, guys. Come on, work with me here.
Yeah, because Gord met with Sophia.
I don't know what Gord did to Rod. And Gord was so proud, too, before she came to sing the anthem. He told me off the air. He was just beaming. Guess who I met? I'm like, oh, geez, who would you have met here? That's a big deal. And then he goes, Sophia Pierce. I go, that is a big deal. That's amazing. That's awesome. Did you get a picture with her? No, totally forgot.
You got no issues taking copious pictures with his dogs.
No,
but he doesn't take a picture with the great anthem singer.
Exactly. So I don't know what he did to rattle.
So
her.
Blame Gord.
It is all 100% Gord Wilson's
blame
fault.
Gord. It all started with Gord, and then it went to the anthem, and then after that, it went to the performance on the ice.
And I think the beautiful part, guys, we can all laugh it off. And the nice part is, unlike the Canadian anthem in the United States, this won't be national news in the U.S. It won't be a big deal. Now, what she has to be careful of, though, does she end up making the bloopers for skating over the carpet guy, for a girl from the World Cup
of Hockey? I don't think so, because she recovered so well.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, that's the only thing, you got to get your agent. I just don't need to be appearing on the blue. But it was everybody just kind of smiled and went on.
It reminded me of, I think it was a Portland Trailblazers game, the little girl that forgot the words, and then Maurice Cheeks, who was coaching, I believe, either Philadelphia, or I think he played for Philadelphia or Portland. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, he walks over, he puts his arm around her, and they sing it together. Like, he kind of picks her up. Yeah. That's one of those great moments.
And also, when they're doing that, Jaron, and I honestly, I would struggle with both, and I'm supposed to be, I am Canadian and live 20 years in the United States. Like, when you take your cue and you get, now, I get even more messed up with a bit of the change of the words in the Canadian anthem, and obviously when you switch to French, I wonder at times how many anthem singers, I'm not saying for her, but overall, like, a lot of times it's coming across a scoreboard, right? The actual words. And do you ever consciously, are you watching that as kind of a cue? Does something end up happening? And like everything else in life, once in a while, you just make a tiny mistake. But I think everyone is able to say smile and move on.
All right. Some texts have come in at 12-1200. When you do text, the standard messaging rates apply. I agree structure is an issue, but I do not think this was a DJ loss. He called a timeout at the right time. We made it 2-1. The team as a whole was just flat. That comes from Karp.
Yeah.
Rob writes, hey guys, I hope new ownership will fully understand that the top players on this team will not put up with losing year after year if things don't get seriously turned around next year. I wouldn't be surprised if players like Tkachuk start asking to be traded. If you think they'll stay here and lose for another 5 years because they're loyal to the crest on the sweater, you're naive. That comes from Rob.
You know what, Rob? It's also funny, and I was thinking of the media stuff yesterday with Zaitsev. I still remember the Bobby Ryan sequence of don't be mean to people because they won't want to play here in Ottawa. We got to get past all this stuff. And this has been talked about with Connor McDavid and other people. I think the players would look and realize, and to the point last night, I don't put it all on the coach. I don't put it all on the GM. I don't put it all on the players. The failures of the Ottawa Senators are collective as a group, including last night. And as far as that part of it, they have made forward progress. Whatever negativity and built up for this year, JR, they are still moving along nicely, where lots of rebuilds go back into another rebuild before they ever get built. And I don't feel like that's happening in Ottawa.
Sens are absolutely a pedestrian team, more hype than substance. What a mess. That comes from Unsigned.
Yeah, I wouldn't say mess. Like I said, I don't, you know, and I think there's a lot when you look back to historically, before Pierre Gauthier and Jacques Martin came in, JR, there are some great things here with Ottawa. There are some really good players, but with an NHL now in 32 teams and as close as it is, there's some things that certainly need to be helped, but man, if I could start a team, hopefully Zub is signed, with Zub, Sanderson, and Chabot on the back end, I like it. If I could start a team up front with a healthy Norris and Stützle and Pinto, along with Tkachuk, Batherson, Giroux still being here to brink it, I don't know if I missed anybody else. Well, I'll tell you what, there'd be a lot of executives lining up to get a hold of this hockey team, JR, so that's not the case. The frustration is there are things that I think could have helped this, both in personnel decisions and in game preparation, that could make for a better product right now.
Great game by Drew Doughty. High minutes, still a stud. That's from the Sandy Hill staff.
He sure brings it, eh? I mean, that's one thing I'll say about him is that, I don't think the physical skills here are quite where they were, but he is a big, heavy, older hockey player that knows how to play.
Farm Team writes, good morning, guys. After watching Fiala last night and thinking about the fact that we were supposedly in on him last year, it just really made me think about how different the team would be if we had him and not DeBrincat. Fiala created offense all night, and on three quarters of the nights, I have no clue what DeBrincat does out there. The Cat's got to be catching some heat soon for his garbage play. That's from the Farm Team.
Yeah, Farm Team, I'm not a huge Fiala guy, and I do think in the case of DeBrincat, the part that, and we had Mike Kelly on, JR, the part that I would say is different, because as we pointed out, I'm not looking for him to win Selke trophies. His playmaking is outstanding. Running the half wall of the power play is worth a lot. Now, I think as far as shot volume and scoring chances, JR, that's gone down. But the biggest difference from what I watched in Chicago and watch now, he doesn't play with quite the same pace. And I don't know if that's line mate system or whatever it is, but that would be my biggest kind of critique as to why is there not more pace, especially off the rush?
I think, and lots of people, you know, it's not that he's not, it was all Patrick Kane last year, but I think that they have just not found a fit for him in terms of line mates. And it's a curious thing because there are, you know, there's, if Norris had been here, you've got an absolute top six and kind of mix and match. But sometimes it's just kind of an oil and water thing.
Oh, it is.
It feels like they still haven't been able to find the combination that works with him.
No, I totally agree, and I never felt it with Norris. But it was a small sample size here. But also, hey, we did say, and we do say, at the end of the day, who's not better with Patrick Kane? Now, that doesn't mean DeBrincat's not good in his own. But the other part that I do think is that these guys were best friends off the ice as well, Jer. I think part of you is missing a little bit of the chemistry, both on and off the ice, that hasn't clicked. And hey, even if Norris is in there, I didn't expect him to be Patrick Kane. So absolutely. But what I also feel watching him is that I don't feel like it, you know, I've been really impressed with how much he makes plays. Like, that's the refreshing part. Yeah. It's not just, hey, give me the puck every time and shoot it. It's like, oh, no, I just think, you know, I think he can be better for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we're a third of the way through the season now. The goal scoring does have to pick up. He's sitting at six, which I don't think anybody expected would be the case when they brought him in. All right, continue to share your thoughts. You can text us at 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN 1200. We'll have your opportunity to win some tickets to see Sen Skills coming up before 8 o'clock. Stand by for that. Dave Poulin will be by after 8. Sens are in Dallas tomorrow night to face the Stars at 8:30. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. 36 on this midweek Wednesday morning. JR Simmer and Hammer with you. All right, if you'd like to win tickets to see Sen Skills coming to Canadian Tire Center on Sunday, January the 8th, you're going to be texting us the correct answer to this question. Who holds the record for the hardest shot at Sen Skills? The one that officially went down as the hardest shot. Okay, there's a bit of a story here. But officially, who holds the record for the hardest shot at Sen Skills? Text us the correct answer and your first and last name. Do it in the next 5 minutes to 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. Amber will draw one name from among all the correct answers. And you are on your way to Canadian Tire Center, Sunday, January the 8th. High noon is the start. It's always a really fun day. A lot of kids there. A lot of noise. Players are always into it as well. So that's coming up. By the way, tickets for SendSkills available through Ticketmaster.ca.
Yeah, still remember Al Iafrady doing the hardest shot, JR, and boy, did that pick up steam. Now, wouldn't stick, but that is one of those events that over the years, yeah, highly featured and very exciting, I think, along with what, the target shooting? You know, but I think, well, a lot of the
fastest skater for me. That's I still enjoy that.
Yeah. I love seeing them do the turn. That's a big part. Getting around the net.
And I do like it a little bit when they each start on one half of the ice. So it's a little bit of a race against another guy. Like they're not, it's not like roller derby where they're actually elbowing each other aside. But when they start on either side, because you kind of get a little bit of perspective there.
Yeah.
Who would win the fastest skater with the Sens? No, Alex Formanton.
Matthew Joseph?
Probably, eh? That's one of the things you don't really, that part hasn't really stuck out about his game this year.
Yeah. Right? Well, it's, again, the ability, and this is, and I every night I think about this conversation with Pooley, because it is one of the great debates in a war room of hockey sense, and a bit of his theory is guys overcoming that, and then there's other players, there's just guys that don't ever, that can really get around, but you don't notice them unless they're going to the right places. So, also put old Timmy Stutzle in there, right? He would be flying around a little bit. Maybe even a Chabot. That'd be my top three.
Yeah, old Chabot. Easy speed for sure.
The big one is who can do the turn, right? I mean, there are, and in the case of Matthew Joseph, I know he's very good straight ahead, but it is those guys like the Connor McDavids that can just haul around the net, not lose any speed. Not to mention, Connor McDavid would probably be faster if he did it with the puck, right?
Jordan Kyrou that won it last year?
I believe so,
actual skills competition with the NHL All-Star, and he beat Connor McDavid, which was interesting. This text comes in and says, I wish the players would let us know what games they plan to show up for. Would save we fans some money. I won't be going to games anymore until they get to a 500 record. That comes from unsigned. I have to say, and then Hammer, you're at all of the games. I mean, the Boston home opener, the game on Saturday, incredible theater, very exciting. Now, they ended up winning. That's a huge part of it as well. I understand that. But there can be exciting losses as well.
And there have been.
But boy, oh boy, they can sure serve up some stinkers. And last night was one, right? They got way down L.A. just kind of suffocated, L.A.'s just sort of suffocated the rest of the game, as you should do when you're up 4-1.
Well, and you also, and again, I joke, JR, but I am so sincere on anything Sunday through, I'll go Wednesday. When you go to any sporting event on a Monday or Tuesday and a Sunday night, and throw that in, JR, but when there's not a huge crowd, and the crowd looked decent last night, but things flatten out for the people, JR, so quickly, right? Like the atmosphere, and again, part of feeling it, Saturday night, I'm not saying it's the reason they played well, but the energy from the anthem on. Hey, I think this is a lot of buildings, but I think you'd agree the CTC on a night coming out of the anthem as a player, you're kind of like, wow, man, I wish it was Saturday night and we had that juice going like we did against San Jose.
All Saturday, especially the night games, they're always good.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
I think it's probably just a Canadian thing.
Well, human nature as well.
Right? It was interesting to see Josh Norris out on the ice yesterday after practice, wearing the yellow jersey, but getting around the ice a little bit puck on his, had a stick and was doing some tips and doing some drills or whatever. And again, there's no real update as far as him returning. The timeline put out by the team a month ago was that we're going to reassess in the month of January, but just watching a little bit of the video or whatever, I'd have to say it's more encouraging than discouraging as far as his potential return.
Well, you're not putting him on the ice, JR, and you think about how he got hurt back to Pinto. I can't even remember on Colin White. He got hurt falling down. Like, you're not throwing that guy on the ice with any chance that when he falls or anything else that his shoulder's going to pop out. So I totally agree. Now, curiosity is how much strengthening they've done. And then the other one, is he having to wear a harness? And to that, if he is, along with rehab, when he comes back, and people have talked about the one-timer, obviously, as a lefty with the left arm, that's not the easiest thing, but I totally agree with you. I say this for every athlete, but you could see in his reaction and also just, hey, how much he loves to play the game, right? And I know they all like it, but I just feel like with this guy, man, he's just hurting the simple fact, and I think it's great that he's going to go on the trip, and dad is there as well and could end up enjoying it, but that would certainly be nice in the new year if he's able to come back and be 100%.
All right, so Sens fall 5-2 to the LA Kings. They're hitting the road today. They're in Dallas to play the Stars tomorrow night, and that Dallas team will be a bit ornery because they got shut out 4-0 by the Leafs last night. Matt Murray, 44 saves, and Mitch Marner's point streak is alive.
At the point, a shot by Marner, deflects in front of the goal. They score! Tavares backhands it home, and I think Marner's going to get an assist on this. And there is the point streak extended to 20 games.
There you go, extending his Leaf record. And he's into, I believe that's into the 30s now, all time in terms of point streak. You guys know the record for the Sens? Sens record for consecutive games with a point?
No, I have no idea. I'm assuming it has to do with the pizza line, but I don't.
Good guess.
Okay.
Do you? Which of the three members of the pizza line do you believe holds the Sens record for consecutive games with a point?
I go with old Jay Spezza.
Jay Spezza. Okay, good guess.
I was going to go with Spezza as well. I was going Spezza or
Spezza
Alfie.
Is not correct.
Okay.
So you're going to go with Alfie? Correct answer is
so
Danny Heatley. Yes,
okay.
Danny Heatley. 22 straight games. To start the 2005 season.
Was that the John Paddock era?
No, that would have been. No, that would be. Who was the. Was Brian.
Brian Murray during the Stanley Cup run.
Was 05?
Jacques Martin got fired at the end of when they lost to Toronto in 04.
Oh, okay.
And then there was no season.
Lockout.
So this was the next. Was it Brian Murray? Did Brian Murray coach the team for the 3 years then to the Cup final? Okay, so it has been Brian Murray then.
Yeah, wow.
So there you go.
Oh, John Paddock in the streak was after the Stanley Cup run, right?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Yeah, I guess on the heater. Now, I'm going to guess that 17 of those were goals in the game.
But with a stick up in the air waiting for the
one-timer. Yeah, but hey, if you can send it the way he could. I will say as well, you talk about goal scorers, watching him in junior and watching him at the University, I think, Wisconsin. There was another thing, too, man. That guy could make plays. Like, not the best skater in the world, and you certainly could critique some other parts of his habits, but he was a hell of a hockey player.
So 20 in a row for Mitch Marner. Jason Robertson had the second longest streak this year at 18. Of course, they were going in the same game last night, and, well, Dallas didn't score, so it's hard to continue your point streak when your team doesn't score.
Yeah, that or you're not playing. And now is the G-man, is it 52, JR?
51.
51.
Wayne Gretzky scored a point in 51 straight games. That's the record. Mario got to 46.
Okay.
I was looking at the list last night, got to 46. Among active players, who do you think has the longest streak? So players still active in the National Hockey League, who do you think has the longest point streak?
Well,
there are only two that are longer than Marner's 20.
Okay. Is it anybody surprising?
Because
the obvious, I'm going to go with McDavid, Dreisaitl, Matthews?
No.
Okay, no. Johnny Tavares?
No.
Ovi?
No.
Sid Crosby?
Sidney Crosby, 25.
Okay.
There's somebody else at 26.
Ooh.
Patrick
Kane?
Patrick Kane. I was just going to say, his name has come up in conversation this hour. Patrick Kane had a 26-gamer in 2015. Sidney Crosby had a 25-gamer in 2010. Danny Heatley's 22-gamer, the Sens record, was in 2005.
Yeah, impressive, man.
Yep.
That's it. And for Mitch Marner, at a time when defensively, that's a part for Toronto, JR. And 44 shots, it's a goaltender as well. But in losing the personnel that they've had and again, I just nothing but impressed with the way he played this year.
My buddy Ron, the Leafs fan, texted me after the game last night. I was fast asleep. I woke up to this morning. He goes, and his complaint, how come Sheldon Keefe never gets any mention for coach of the year?
Yeah.
And I texted him back and I said, because a month ago, everybody wanted him fired.
Yeah.
Now, full credit because, listen, the Leafs, and I think is it 13-0-3 or something in their last 16?
Yeah.
Like they're on an incredible streak right now. They're closing in on Boston for first place, and they're doing it without their three best defensemen, but the three highest paid defensemen, and certainly three defensemen that would be in their top six.
Oh God!
If they were all healthy, they're doing this on the backs of some pretty ordinary defensemen, and that's and part of that you have to give credit to the coach, absolutely.
Oh. But then again, JR, this is kind of like with players. I don't think any of us have ever said, I'm so impressed with the journey that Sheldon Keefe has been on and recognizing that market and the struggles. Well, I just thought at the start of the year when they started and his lack of composure, I felt like, man, this has got to kind of give. But what was interesting when he had MJ on or Pooley, I can't remember who it was, but this exact circumstance happened last year, right? Where they were off to a bit of a slow start. They come from that Western trip. You're like, oh my God. If they lose tonight, and they went on a run last year, and we all said, well, they can't do that this year. They're not as good a team. So absolutely very impressive, and I think everybody involved there needs, deserves credit, including our good friend, Matt Murray.
44 saves for Matt Murray last night, and I believe he's now 7-0-2 this season, so playing some good hockey. So Ottawa's into Dallas. Again, my prediction from last hour, I'm holding to it. Usually when a team gets shut out, especially a good goal-scoring team, they score in the next game really early. So first 5 minutes tomorrow night, I'm predicting a Dallas goal against
them. Okay, and I'm going to bet against you, and
okay.
I'm going to say Ottawa scores in the first 5 minutes based on the dads on the road.
Okay, all right.
And historically...
What if they both score?
That's excellent. Then it's a tie. But historically, when dads are on the trip, teams score within the first average.
Now you're making it up.
I know.
But I know
what you're saying, and it's also for Dallas, so... The only thing I'd factor in a little bit different than what you're saying on your theory, JR, is that There are nights where you're terrible, and then I would say, absolutely, you're coming back, you're going to rock and roll. There's also a night you say to yourself, we got 44 shots, and the goaltender stands on his head, but that's a very good hockey team. And then the other part, the special teams war, you know, Ottawa's penalty kill, and a lot is goaltending, but it's also personnel thing that they're going to be seeing. They're going to be up against a very good Dallas team on the road.
And a motivated team as well, for sure. Yeah. All right, 7:57. A couple things from the NFL. Sounds like, according to Adam Schefter, the doctors took another look at Jimmy Garoppolo's foot and said he doesn't need season-ending surgery, and there is a chance he could be back for the playoffs. So the injury is now 7 to 8 weeks. And if you do the math, which I did, and I was moving my lips as I counted the numbers, 7 weeks would bring him back if you go back to Sunday, which would be the day he was injured, would take you to the NFC divisional round. So wild card weekend is the first weekend, then it's the divisional round. 8 weeks, so it's a 7 to 8 week recovery. 8 weeks would be the conference championship. So they would have to win at least, because they're not going to get top seed and a bye in the first round. They would have to win at least one round, if not two, with, I guess, Brock Purdy as their quarterback to have any chance of Jimmy Garoppolo being back for the
playoffs. And I also think you have to factor in, and I always looked at this with Eric Carlson, beautiful people heal faster, Jer, because when they look in the mirror, and Jimmy Garoppolo, Eric Carlson, also very beautiful, comes back quickly. Jimmy G, like, he is one, you got to admit, one of the better looking men on the planet. I know you're not a big fan of his football, but you have to admit, good looking fella, right?
He's no Roman Yossi, but absolutely.
Oh, he's a great looking man right there.
So that should help.
So there you go.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And I thought I was going to be able to throw back on you for the whole chat on Monday about maybe somebody will put a quarterback on waivers and help somebody out. I just didn't expect it to be the Rams that would grab Baker Mayfield.
Well,
like, what is the purpose? They're not going to make the playoffs.
They just need somebody.
Yeah, and just having this guy around.
They just need a body because I think it's John Wofford, I believe, is the backup. He's hurt as
hurt. That's right.
And then the other guy had thrown, 11 passes in his career. So I think the Rams have now gone into embarrassment phase where they're just trying to, Sean McVay is, they have the worst record of any defending Super Bowl champion in history. So they're just trying to get it where
they want as good of a first. They don't.
So that right now, with the way the records are, and again, 5 weeks to go in the season, of the top five picks in the NFL where teams are situated right now, three of the teams that would draft in the top five have traded their first round pick. That's amazing.
So Denver to Seattle.
The Rams to Detroit for Matthew Stafford. And the Saints traded their first rounder to the Eagles in a trade. I'm still trying to figure out why they did what they
did.
The Eagles had three first rounders last year, so they traded one of them, a mid first rounder, for a first rounder this year, a third rounder last year, and a second rounder in 2024.
What? How does that make sense?
Because they want,
because really want,
you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. I want the first rounder now. New Orleans wanted the extra first rounder, and they were willing to gamble. I don't think they thought they were going to end up in the, and they'll probably win a couple of games because they got a fairly easy schedule down the stretch. But that's probably going to end up being a top 10 pick.
And the Denver Broncos trade is almost Matt Duchene-esque, right? There's
not
a person on the planet.
Sweet.
And this is one of the great meetings every year, guys, is when you get together with your fantasy group, where everybody knows professional football so well, and everybody that would, I was like, should I take that Taylor Lockett there, or Tyler? And they're like, you got no quarterback to throw to. It's always funny, how people are like, who's going to throw to him? And you're like, okay. And then you're like, I got to get one of the Denver receivers because they're going to be so good. And it's just absolutely, I can't think. Well, nobody saw this both sides of it, Jared, did they?
Like, no.
Nobody
thought Russell Wilson would be this bad.
No, and then Seattle.
I mean, there is a and most people are aware of this.
I didn't think he would be this bad, but I didn't think he was going to be the quarterback. He hasn't been the quarterback, he was 3 years ago.
Some Bronco fan every week on social media updates it. Russell Wilson touchdown passes versus Russell Wilson bathrooms in his house. And right now, bathrooms in his house is still leading touchdown passes. It's like 15 to 12 or something like that.
And hopefully he's not doing dine and dash in the Denver restaurant. That's now where you've actually entered the zone where you're being accosted by the staff because they really don't care who you are.
Exactly.
We just want you to pay for your dinner.
Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. Who should be Canada's Athlete of the Year? They're announcing, they're debating it this morning and then announcing the winner. This used to be called the Lou Marsh Trophy until they all people recognize that Lou Marsh was not a very good human being, and so they've renamed it now the Northern Star Award. So, and that recognizes Canada's Athlete of the Year. We've given you two options and then other, because a lot of the people are suggesting it's a two-person race. With Felix Auger-Aliassime and Brooke Henderson are the leading two contenders to be Canada's Athlete of the Year. So who do you think it should be? Not who you think will win, but who should win. Felix, Brooke, or other. Those are your three options. Let us know what you think at tsn1200.ca. They'll announce the winner of the Northern Star Award coming up this afternoon. All right, just past 8 o'clock. We'll take a break. Top of the hour update is on the way. All the details on the Sens 5-2 loss to the Kings. And we'll talk about it with Dave Poulin coming up next on TSN 1200.